Previously on Colors.
The Arab American National Museum.
This museum was created in 2005 in Dearborn, which is a heavily concentrated Arab American community.
Shahla Najim is a community historian at the museum.
And it's for the purpose of representing the Arab American culture and community on a national level.
And she plays a very important role.
I basically collect oral histories from the community. So I work as an oral historian at the museum, and that's basically documenting the personal stories and narratives of Arab Americans.
She joins us with a very detailed look at this museum at a critical time in U.S. history. She also talks about her role as an oral historian and her background and family from Baghdad.
Coming up in this episode of Colors.
Her name is Nissa Ree.
I'm a white person, a female. I live in Chicago. I'm the executive director and co-founder of a nonprofit news outlet that covers immigration.
We caught up with her in Greece, where she was training journalists.
I think a lot about race when it comes to the topic of immigration and that system.
And she has a vested interest in what's happening in America's racial scene.
My husband is Korean American. We have biracial children. So I really see race impact my family directly through my children and my husband and through my work, and seeing how race is such a central motivator in our immigration system and how we detain and decide who gets to come into our country or not.
That's coming up in this episode of Colors.
Simmering racial tensions.
Segregation now and tomorrow and forever.
Fighting injustice.
I have a dream.
Conflict looming.
Justice! Peace!
Brutality exposed.
I can't breathe! I can't breathe!
The search for solutions starts here.
From WTOP in Washington, D.C.
This is Colors, a dialogue on race in America.
One of the best things about living in America is diversity. On this episode, we're going to take a look at immigration. We're going to do it from a white female's perspective. And she brings her own unique set of circumstances and viewpoints to this topic. It's undeniably a time when immigration in the United States and many places around the world need a closer look. We're joined now by Nissa Ree. She's the executive director of Borderless Magazine. Okay, Nissa, thank you for joining us on Colors. Chicago and race. It is a very multi-ethnic place. It is a very diverse place, I should say, in many ways, many respects. And I think you actually work in the immigration space too. So that probably assist in many ways your understanding on a very much deeper level than most of us about the intricacies of immigration here in the U.S. and the importance of it. So first, I would like to ask you if you would just talk to us a little bit about your views, your thoughts on race in America, the way things are now.
Yeah, I think the way I see things is definitely impacted by my job. I'm executive director of a nonprofit news outlet called Borderless Magazine, and we cover immigration and immigrant communities, which in Chicago, you're exactly right. We have a lot of different immigrant communities, both from Europe, Africa, Asia, all over. But we do have a large Latino population. One third of Chicagoans speak Spanish at home. So we publish in English and Spanish and some other languages sometimes. And I think also just as a Chicagoan, I grew up in the Chicago suburbs. I've lived a lot of places around the world, but I've only lived in Cook County in the U.S. So I know that area really well. And Chicago is known for a lot of things, but it's one of the most racially segregated cities in the world. And it is completely possible to live in a neighborhood and not really interact with someone of a different race and just live your life that way in Chicago, because it is a huge city. We have 77 neighborhoods, but it is very segregated. And yes.
What is it that is the mechanism for this segregation? Is it the layout, the planning? I think I've heard in previous conversations about railroads and transit and all of that. Are these the principal segregation tools, or are there other things that make this a segregated city so segregated?
Definitely the historical context of redlining of housing, where people from, when you were selling a house, there it used to be that you were allowed to say that only persons of a certain race could buy the house. And that really created like different areas where you could only buy a house. And similarly, getting loans, like only certain banks would allow you if you're not white or if you're not a certain race, to get a loan. So that really reduced the opportunities. I think then also on top of that, exactly as you said, there's a highway system, there's a railroad that really cut through communities and created these physical divides. So in Chicago, we have the north side, the south side, and the west side, and the east side is the lake. We do get this setup where the north side is largely white, the west side is kind of a mix of Latino and Black, and the south side is like largely Black. And you see, I've done, before I worked at Borderless, I did a lot of reporting on criminal justice and gun violence, and you see it across everything. The race impacts everything. And when I say everything, I mean, it's how many years do you live on this earth? That is determined by your zip code and your race in a very tangible way. So like if you go from downtown Chicago, just a few miles west to the west side of Chicago, the life expectancy in downtown, if you're living in a high rise, it's something in like your 70s. If you go west, it's the same life expectancy of someone living in a rock today. So it's huge. It's a huge gap, and it's complicated. It's due to historical reasons. It's due to a lack of access to education, healthcare, the way that people are overly incarcerated. There's like a million things that go into that. But so much of it is tied to race and like how we have historically treated communities in Chicago.
How is Chicago, I guess, as a whole, managing this moving forward? Because a lot of us look at, and this podcast too was created in the wake of the death of George Floyd, kind of this moment in history when we started pivoting, taking a deeper, better, more sincere look at race in America and the impacts on people living here. So how are these problems, these issues being managed in Chicago by everyday folks? And even I know the mayor has been changed, and some other things have taken place as well, but I know the murder rate is still really pretty insane, as it is in many places. But how are people managing these issues that you talk about?
I think it's hard. I think we had our own version of George Floyd in Chicago, with a young boy was killed by the police and shot 16 times. And the slogan the marchers used was 16 shots in a cover-up. So, we kind of went through our own, while all this stuff was happening nationally, we were dealing with this locally. And I think it's hard. I think there was a lot of hope that a couple of years ago or a few years ago that things maybe would be shifting. So the police department went under consent decree because of all the problems of over-policing and targeting Black people specifically, but also Latinos to some level. And, they just came out with a report on like how much progress the police department has made towards these changes, and it's basically zero. It's like a tiny, tiny fraction of the things they said they would change and improve has been done. And that's really frustrating. Our last two mayors, our current mayor and mayor before Lightfoot, have been Black. And so there was hope that, that could mean something. And it hasn't meant a lot, you know, as far as like actual changes to people's lives. I think the reality is Chicago's population is decreasing and Black people are moving out. That's like the bottom line. There's a lot of studies that, you know, show in our census and whatever that like Black people are moving out. Like they can find better jobs and housing elsewhere. They're sick of it. And so our population is kind of changing and like we'll see kind of what comes out of that. But people are frustrated. You know, my kids are in the Chicago public school system and the school system serves the entire city. But each school is not the same. Even though the money is coming from the same exact place, they should all be equal education opportunities. That is not the case. You know, a school on the north side is by and large much better than a school on the south side. And why is that? Is people looking at it, they're like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. And there's been efforts to change, but I think people would like to see the change come faster.
So is this problem, does this have to do with Chicago being the old time politically? You know, people think of Chicago, or at least I do, as the city of a political machine. So is this the reason why Chicago is having those kinds of problems? Or is it not managing the changes in America and changes in people?
I don't know the machine is real. I think, you know, we are no longer in that daily era where right. like we had, that was
the
like,
daily dynasty.
Yes. That like we've passed that now, but, like our, you know, current mayor is very involved with the Chicago Teachers Union, which is part of another machine. But I think, it's hard to say exactly like what are the stumbling blocks. I think part of it is just a cultural, this is not something. The segregation in Chicago is extreme, but there are other cities that are also segregated. As a reporter for the Christian Science Monitor, I had the opportunity to do some reporting in the Twin Cities on segregation. And it was interesting there because they were very successful at desegregating their schools and communities. And then they changed some of their laws and their policies, and now it's getting segregated again, or at least it was when I was doing the reporting. So I think, you know, their laws and policies can really make a difference in how we live with each other. But then also there's that cultural narrative change element that, you know, I'm really interested in as a journalist and how we can see each other as humans and relate to each other in more of a whole way and not just like, oh, this person should be treated this way because they look this way.
We've been talking a lot about Chicago, but you are not to be defined by just Chicago because the work you do in immigration is much more far afield than there. So I'd like to ask, how does your work, how does Chicago, your living in Chicago, impact your work and your view of immigration and what needs to be done to make sure, I'm assuming, that everyone gets a fair shake and everyone is treated well? So just give me your view on how Chicago shapes or impacts, if at all, your thoughts and your work.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when I started my career, I worked in public radio in Chicago on a show that really no longer exists, but it kind of focused on global issues and how it impacts Chicago. And at the time, a lot of people were like, why do we even need this show? Like, shouldn't that show be in DC or like, you know, New York? Like, those are the global cities. And like, even with when we started Borderless magazine, I think there was some question around that too. Like, aren't all the immigration stories in Texas? Like, aren't they at the border? Like, why are we talking about this in Chicago? And the reality is we have 1.6 million immigrants in the Chicago region. It's a huge population. And one third of Chicagoans are speaking Spanish alone, Spanish at home alone. And, you know, that's not counting other languages. We have a huge Polish population. We have a huge group of Ukrainian refugees, Afghan refugees. So it's an incredibly global and diverse community we have. And so it's really important to think about how immigration and immigrants are a local issue and not just like this stuff that happens in Washington, D.C. It's happening across the country and impacting the lives of our neighbors, you know. So I think that's kind of how I think about it, like localizing these big issues.
Lisa, what's the most important thing to you when it comes to your work right now?
I think just reminding people not only that these are important issues and stories, but that we are not powerless. I think, you know, especially when Biden became president, with a lot of people were like, oh, phew, like no more Muslim travel ban, like immigration is solved, we're all good. And like, that hasn't been the reality. Like most of the immigration policies are exactly the same. And we just don't talk about it as much. And, you know, places that used to have a immigration desk or someone focusing on immigration in the newsroom, like cut that position, or someone left and they never filled it. And so, you know, we see these kind of ebbs and flows of interest in these issues. And meanwhile, you know, in Chicago, we have over 1 million people who are impacted. So, you know, what I like to say is like every newsroom should be thinking about immigration and immigrants and how do you serve, not only serve that population, but like help bring news about them to your other non-immigrant populations. And it should go, you know, every part of your coverage, not just talking about like, oh, DACA renewals, but like from the courts, you know, the court system, criminal justice to sports. Because like we have a soccer team in Chicago, a lot of them are immigrants. You know, you should be thinking about this throughout. That's kind of the battle cry in Chicago. And also thinking about language access. In Chicago, we have a lot of news outlets. You know, we're lucky, we are a big city, but almost none produce content in Spanish. And so why is that? You know, we should be making a better effort at serving all of our communities and not just one portion of our communities.
Have things improved since George Floyd's death or not? I mean, I hear you're talking about a lot of things that are still going on, and we kind of thought that once the leadership of the nation changed, some of these things might be solved, but they haven't been. Why is that?
I think there's a lot of people who don't want things to change, and they have a vested interest in things remaining the same. And I mean, I no longer cover criminal justice or gun violence, but you know, in my sphere, in like covering immigration and immigrants, I sometimes feel like I'm hitting my head against the wall because it is like saying the same thing over and over and over again. But the reality is that some people don't want to hear it. And some of the people who have a lot of money and power are the ones who don't want to hear it. And or they want to be like, oh, we solved that. We got our DEI officer. We like put our racial statement up on our job description or whatever, you know, small kind of things without like moving the needle. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, have things changed? I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, definitely things have changed in the last 4 years. Like we had COVID, a lot has changed, but, you know, the big sweeping changes that we were hoping to see, no, you know, like we were saying about the consent decree in Chicago. Like, I think, you know, we were hoping to see a lot of improvements in policing in Chicago and how that, you know, how police, interact with, communities of color. And we haven't really seen that. So it's frustrating. It's frustrating. But people are still fighting. People are still fighting. No one has thrown in the towel.
So I have to ask you this question. This was a big deal down in the Washington area, this whole thing about defund the police and the impacts of that. Was that a thing there? And were there any impacts of that in Chicago?
Definitely. Yeah, it was a thing in Chicago and other parts of the Midwest. People asking not just defund the police, but fund social workers, fund access to other mental health resources. I think there's been some movement and some opportunities to, like if someone has a mental health crisis, there is a number you can call instead now, instead of you calling the police. I don't know how much it's utilized or like the impact of that, so it's hard to say. I think the other thing that's kind of changed in Chicago is that we created a community oversight board for the police that you vote on those people to do be a part of that. So that exists. It's too early to say the impact and like whether that's making a difference or not. I think it's just too early. So we don't know yet. But there have been small, you know, changes like that on the structural level, which hopefully, you know, will push things forward in the right way.
I kind of feel like I've asked you a lot of questions about some very general issues, but I'd want to take the last few minutes of our conversation to maybe get a bit more personal or drill down a little bit on things that are important to you instead of the questions that I'm asking. So let me ask you this. Is there something that's important to you that I haven't asked you about that you think is important enough for us to discuss before we end this conversation?
Yes, I think just the nuance of all of this. I think people, what I found in my work and my life is that even people that we might look as progressive have their own ideas and stereotypes and whatnot. You know, I live in a very, just like very personal, kind of a dumb example, but, or at least not super meaningful example, but I live in a progressive city. I, you know, raised my children in a neighborhood that was very progressive. My children are biracial. And when they were babies, I would take them to the playground and everyone thought I was the nanny. And, you know, like to have that happen in such a progressive place that's a very diverse city, you know, was kind of shocking to me. And so all that's to say, you know, I see in my friend group, I see in my family, like there's a lot of like understanding of, you know, going beyond stereotypes of people. That, you know, our communities are not one thing, but I think it is kind of, we still have work to do. Mm-hmm. We still have work to do. And I think, you know, part of the work I do at Borderless is really uplifting that nuance of, you know, immigrants are not just one thing. You know, I talk to sometimes funders because we are a nonprofit and they'll tell me, oh yeah, immigrants, they're like, Latino, like gardeners or housekeepers or like, you know, they're undocumented Mexicans. And I'm like, wait, no, like there's like Lebanese doctors and like, scientists and like everyone, like all spectrum of different experiences and like lives. And like, maybe even the gardener was a doctor, like, and now they're a gardener, like, because they couldn't find work. So I think just bringing that nuance up and be like, okay, it's not just one thing. It's something more complicated. And I think a big thing we do at Borderless is really focusing on that humanization. So telling those individual stories and not just the policy, big picture stuff. I think that's well handled. So just really kind of drilling in, like, what does this mean for individuals?
Yeah. Lisa, this has been a fantastic and very intriguing conversation. Probably something that should last an hour, but we're not going to do that today. What I would like to do, though, is to come back to you at Borderless and talk to you maybe in 3 to 6 months to see how things are going with the border, the immigration situation in this country, because, you know, there's an election coming and people are talking about things. So maybe we talk about some of those things later on.
Yeah, that sounds great. You know, all this stuff is really coming to Chicago as well with the Venezuelan migrants and the buses coming here. So I'd be happy to talk to you again.
All right. Thank you, Nisa. Nisa Ri. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Stay tuned for some thoughts about race in America and details about our next guest.
You're listening to Colors.
My name is Larry Sinners. I'm an Indian Jamaican who have been living in the United States for the last 25 years. I am a U.S. naturalized citizen. The issue of racism in this country stares you straight in the face. It's not hidden, it's not behind a bush, and it's not under the voice of people whispering. It is loud and it's dangerous, and it's killing people. It's killing my brothers, it's killing my sisters, it's killing everyone who are part and parcel of the community that we live in, and it has got to stop.
This is Colors, a dialogue on race in America.
If you have any questions or comments about Colors, send us an email. You can reach us at colors at thecolorspodcast.com. That's colors at thecolorspodcast.com.
Coming up in our next episode of Colors.
Bienvenidos sean todos a las tardeadas con DJ Chicano en la Mira Mira 1050 AM 93.5 FM.
His name is Bryant Morales.
I'm also known as DJ Chicano here in the area.
And you can hear him on La Mera Mera Radio in Washington, D.C.
I'm currently 27 years old. I'm a local Marylander, but I am Latino, my dad being Mexican and my mom being Peruvian.
And we're going to talk with him about his work.
I love being able to connect with people through music.
That's coming up in our next episode of Colors.
We are really cooking with the guests, as I promised you, here on Colors. Thanks to Jesse Gallagher. Thanks to Cosmic. Thanks to Akash Gandhi. And thanks to Offshane for our music. And thank you to everybody that's helped us put this show together. Mike Jakaitis, Hillary Howard. Thanks to Joel Oxley. And thank you for listening. And most of all, I'd like to say to you, keep talking to each other.
And just as important, keep listening to each other.
You can subscribe to Colors wherever you get your podcasts. This is Colors, a dialogue on race in America.